At Shippawada, Bhaktivedanta Swami, that's where we are, yes?
Left-handed, okay.
In a godless civilization, Bhaktivedanta Swami referred to Prime Minister Nehru's complaints about the misuse of public funds in the name of religion. Bhaktivedanta Swami noted that although there were undoubtedly instances in which religious leaders were implicated in criminal offenses, if statistics were compared, the religious cheaters would be outnumbered by the political cheaters. Although Pandit Nehru had been right in warning of religious fraud, the warning could not be effective without a thorough reform of spiritual institutions, and that reform could be accomplished only with the cooperation of government leaders. Bhaktivedanta Swami quoted from his letter in which he had asked Prime Minister Nehru to take up the study of Bhagavad Gita. But as he informed his Bhaktivedanta readers, Pandit Nehru had never replied. Because of his lack of spiritual knowledge, he thought that this institution, the League of Devotees, might be something like the so many mosques and temples which have become the source of headache for the Pandit. Bhaktivedanta Swami charged that Pandit Nehru thought that any spiritual organization is a dungeon for accumulating political funds and then misuse it for questionable purposes. He, however, approves of the so-called sadhus who do social service and talk nonsense in the spiritual science. This is so because he has no depth of spiritual knowledge for himself, though he is a Brahmin and a Pandit. Ignorance in spiritual knowledge is the qualification of the sutras, or the laboring class. He requested Pandit Nehru not to be afraid of the word God or Krishna. But we can assure him that there is no such cause of fear, because Krishna is everyone's friend and able to render real help to everyone. Bhaktivedanta Swami ended by suggesting that immoral practices were confined not only to the temples of India, but were common to materialistic civilizations all over the world. In particular, he cited the disturbances amongst youth that were becoming rampant in the 1960s. The best thing will be for the physician to heal himself first, because in godless civilization, while the occupants of the mosques and temples have been the cause of headache for the Pandit, the same thing under a different label has become the cause of headache for other European and Asian statesmen. The unbridled youngsters of those countries, under the name of Kenny Boys in England, the rebels without cause in America, and the half-strong in Germany, the leather jackets in Sweden, the children of the sun in Japan, and the style boys in the USSR are some of the byproducts of a godless civilization. Prabhupada obviously had been keeping up with the news and knew all the latest lingo at the time. And that is the root cause of all headache. That requires a thorough treatment. So, this is referring to the then Prime Minister of India, Nehru, is blaming the religion and the sadhus in India for so many problems, saying how they were all corrupt. And quote unquote, Nehru said that spiritual organizations, they're dungeons for accumulating public funds and then misusing it for questionable purposes. So, it's quite popular to make religion the whipping boy for society. And it's true, as Prabhupada writes here, that there'll always be examples of mistakes in religious endeavors and religious institutions. However, Prabhupada makes the salient point that if you make a statistical analysis and calculate the number of frauds in religion as compared to the number of frauds in the political world, obviously you know which side will far outnumber. Just like now in the USA, once again, for the first time since President Nixon was dragged down, now they're forcing President Clinton to bring documents that he was refusing to present because they're accusing him of hiding his involvement in some tawdry affairs. So, this is the president who the people elect. As Prabhupada explained, in a democracy, the voters have no one to blame but themselves, since they elect the leaders. So, we don't want to feel intimidated by this style of materialistic persons. Every time there's some problem in a religious organization, they say, just see, religion is a fraud. If you want to make an analysis, then obviously the frauds in the political system far outnumber defrauds and religious system. And anyway, real religion means the propagation of the absolute truth. Sometimes that propagation is attempted by those who are dubious in their behavior. But in the political world, the persons who carry out the political work are of horrible behavior, and they're not propagating any truth. So, in other words, Prabhupada's telling Prime Minister Nehru here, people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Anyway, we'll speak more about that today. I think there's some points that come in relation to today's verse about Prabhupada's answer, his strategy to avoid being accused by the world of starting an escapist religion which has no contribution to the so-called practical society. So we're, by Prabhupada's grace, we've been saved from becoming, as he says, teddy boys in England, rebels without cause in America, the half-strong in Germany, the leather jackets in Sweden, the children of the sun in Japan, and the style boys in the USSR. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva. Text 26. Kachit Pashavyam Nirujam.
Kachit Pashavyam Nirujam.
Buryam Bhutrina Virudam.
Buryam Bhutrina Virudam.
Brihad Vanam Taraduna.
Brihad Vanam Taraduna.
Yatraste Tom Sahid Vrita.
Yatraste Tom Sahid Vrita.
Feather. Ashavyam,
protection of the cows.
Nirujam,
Nirujam,
without difficulties or disease.
Uri,
sufficient.
Ambu,
water.
Trina,
grass. Virudam,
plant.
Brihat Vanam,
the great forest.
Tat. All these arrangements are there.
Adura.
Now.
Yatra.
Where? Ase.
Our living.
Tum.
You.
Suhrit.
Rita.
Surrounded by friends.
Surrounded by friends.
My dear friend Nanda Maharaj, in the place where you are living with your friends, is the forest favorable for the animals, the cows? I hope there is no disease or inconvenience. The place must be full of water, grass, and other plants. Purport. For human happiness, one must care for the animals, especially the cows. Vasudeva therefore inquired whether there was a good arrangement for the animals where Nanda Maharaj lived. For the proper pursuit of human happiness, there must be arrangements for the protection of cows. This means there must be forests and adequate pasturing grounds full of grass and water. If the animals are happy, there will be an ample supply of milk, from which human beings will benefit by deriving many milk products with which to live happily. As enjoined in Bhagavad Gita, Krishi Goraksha Bani Jam Vaisha Karma Swabhava Jam. Without giving proper facilities to the animals, how can human society be happy? That people are raising cattle to send to the slaughterhouse is a great sin. By this demoniac enterprise, people are ruining their chance for a truly human life. Because they are not giving any importance to the instructions of Krishna, the advancement of their so-called civilization resembles the crazy efforts of men in a lunatic asylum. So there you have Prabhupada's pronouncement upon the so-called civilization of today. People are ruining their chance to be actually humans, and because they're not giving any instructions to the importance, not giving any importance to the instructions of Krishna, their efforts resemble the crazy efforts of persons in a crazy house. How can that be? We We all think we are so educated, we all think we're very competent, and we think our society here in New Zealand is very peaceful, well-ordered. There have been great victories the past year, the capturing of the America's Cup, which surely shows that throughout the land there is vitality, exuberance, and piety. Going to the finals in the Rugby World Cup, only to lose to South Africa because there was some stomach virus on the part of the All Blacks. Yes, this shows our mighty nation is vibrant. The social benefits offices are still open. People are getting their benefit money. All these things are going on so nicely. The political processes in the Beehive in Wellington are going on nicely. And the new political arrangement, whatever it is that they made for making political parties, hasn't resulted in chaos. Indeed, things are going on so nicely in our little country. There's no need to worry. The cattle are being taken to the slaughterhouses. The sheep are being taken. The flesh is being shipped overseas. What could be more wonderful? Tourism is now bringing in so much money. This is the way Maya makes things look. Maya makes it look like you can break Krishna's instructions and everything will be all right. It never is like that, but Maya makes it look like that. Again and again and again, if you have bothered to be acquainted with human history, you'll see that whatever people thought, the opposite turned out. When they thought their economy was booming, a Great Depression happened. Even as recently as 1988 year, there was a big crash. Everyone thought, oh, everything is kiji, wonderful, and in Australia and New Zealand, everything collapsed. So many times, people have been bewildered about their perceptions, but they cannot give up their attraction to the material energy. Impossible. As long as these senses consider these sense objects as things for enjoyment, you must engage in the Maya process of illusion. The only way off this conveyor belt is to understand that the sense objects are meant for Krishna's pleasure. Just like, for example, World War I. Nobody is here who was alive during World War I. Probably your parents weren't even alive during World War I. Yet, World War I, the war started in May or June or July or something like that. And everyone thought it would be just a nice European war between the nobilities and that. Each side sent off their boys to the front, and they were all telling their soldiers, you'll be back by the time the leaves fall from the trees. That meant autumn time, September, 2 months, 3 months, and they said, you'll all be back by the time autumn comes. What happened? 3-4 years of war went on, killing millions and millions of people. Then again, after World War I, they formed a League of Nations. And they said, never again! They called World War I the war to end all wars. We have learned our lesson. We have learned our lesson. We have formed the League of Nations. Everybody wants peace. Meanwhile, in the USA, big economic expansion, the Roaring Twenties, as they were called. And everyone was making so much money. Not everyone, but those who were making more money through financial speculation. And everyone thought the economy would just grow and grow and grow, and then what happened? Crash. Huge depression. Then, 20 years after World War I ended, the war to end all wars, World War II started. And now people are still thinking, oh, there'll be peace through the United Nations. New Zealand sends its little tiny army to help out in the peacekeeping missions in Bosnia, giving its contribution to world peace. So people think, oh yes, things will be all right. Nobody wants war. What those people are doing in the former Yugoslavia is horrible. Killing of civilians, mass rape, mass destruction of villages. It's horrible. The world has learned its lesson. Human beings want to live together in peace. Each one should be able to gratify his or her senses as you see fit. Meanwhile, what's going on? So many animals are being slaughtered, especially cows. And nobody cares. So much of the economy in New Zealand is based on shipping of flesh overseas. Shipping of dead flesh overseas. And people think there'll be no reaction? No, that's not the way nature works. So many abortions are going on. All this is being allowed by the government. How can you expect national peace and tranquility when you have a government that sponsors animal slaughter, intoxication, gambling. Gambling casinos are popping up everywhere now. How can there be any kind of peace for law? And even the peace you think you're perceiving right now is filled with so much anxiety. That is the hilarious joke of mine. Even when you think you have peace right now, it's simply an illusion that's saturated with anxiety. And then what happens? Even that so-called peace you have, which is actually anxiety, is smashed by nothing but out-and-out anxiety. This is what happens. How can there be real stability and security now or in the future for your children when you have a government that sponsors everything against their regular principles? Illicit sex, how can a government allow abortion? Here there is no real controversy amongst the government for abortion. In other countries it's a little bit controversy. But here, no, this is New Zealand. We allow every person to, you know, we're tolerant of what every person does. And, you know, if a woman wants to do something to her body, that's her business. But it's not really a child yet, it's just part of her body, just like you pop a pimple on your skin. Similarly, if a woman wants to, you know, abort herself, that's her thing. And if somebody else is a Christian, a few of those are left, and they think that, you know, abortion is bad, well, that's their thing too. Here in New Zealand, we should just all live together and go on holiday peacefully to our boches and not get into each other's faces about anything. This way, people think life will go on like that. Sometimes the ground shakes because of a few earthquakes, but because we're so nice, nature will never kick us out. A few rumbles in Wellington, a few rumbles in Nelson, Mount Rapeu, you know, sometimes some smoke comes out, but, you know, because we are so nice and tolerant and gentle, nature will always be kind upon us. So in this way, the people think that, just like, for example, in the USA now, they're having some discussion that there is something about abortion we should outlaw. It's astonishing how people can discuss these things and not realize how low and how much killers they become. They singled out the late-term abortions in which the head of the baby is punctured and the machine sucks out the brains of the baby. I think, well, this is a little too much. This we should ban this. Because at least they're talking about it. I mean, here in New Zealand, there's no governmental controversy at all. In the States, there's a huge governmental controversy about that aspect of abortion. So, in other words, this is how low people have sunk. That they read these things in the newspaper. Now, in the Congress, they're having a debate whether in late pregnancy there should be an abortion by puncturing the head of a baby and sucking out its brain. What do you think about that? Well, I'm a Republican. I'm part of the Republican Party. I think that's not good. Or I'm part of the Democratic Party. I don't know. Let me see what my senator thinks about that. And people are just totally bewildered. They can't even recognize what is what. And that is a symptom of the mode of ignorance. In the 16th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Pravittancha, Nivrittancha, Janana Vidrashtra. When you are in the mode of ignorance, you become a demon. What does it mean to be a demon? To have two horns on your head and look like Frankenstein? No. To be a demon means you don't know what to do or what not to do. So you can see these people have no idea what to do or what not to do. They have no idea how to make a peaceful civilization. If they can get a few years of so-called tranquility, which is actually filled with anxiety, if they think, oh, how our society is advancing. This is the ignorance that is going on. So, no idea of the proper principles of human civilization. We must kill animals and make money off of their flesh. Just like I was visiting with Pio and Nandiki recently on their land near Kaikoura. And they have calculated that by Pio, he was born a sheep farmer, so he wants to support his family by raising sheep. So he's calculated that by not slaughtering the sheep and simply raising sheep for wool, the particular kind of sheep he has, merino sheep, he's only losing $2 per sheep per year because he doesn't send them to slaughter. But that's not the way the so-called agricultural experts will present things. How can you farm without killing the animals? It's impossible. But he's shown that he'll only lose $2 per head. And of course, he'll lose out on so much bad karma too. He has to do less work because he doesn't have to breed the sheep very heavily, so they have lamb after lamb after lamb, so the lambs go to the slaughter. Less work for him. He doesn't have to drench the sheep, you know, put them through so many chemical processes, so much anxiety. He's actually doing less work because he's not slaughtering the sheep. So, Actually, when I was there, he even had me on top of a mountain. On a small mountain that was so high you could see the North Island from it. He had me on top of a mountain helping him herd sheep. I must have been the first Maui to herd sheep or something. Anyway, he's practically showing that this is complete illusion, that you need to slaughter animals in order to live a basic life. And while I was there, because he's a new farmer in the area, every day some stock agent, different stock agent would come by, and they all had these euphemisms, these words they use instead of saying, when are you going to send your animals in to be killed? They just kind of come up real nice, shirt and tie on. Oh, how you doing? Are you a new farmer in the region? Well, you going to be finishing anything this year? Or how many stock units you'll be sending in? Do you know yet? So he just told him, well, not thinking about that right now, because his strategy is that he wants the people to accept him first, and then they already know he's a vegetarian and a Hare Krishna, so the greatest shock will be that he's not finishing any stock units. That's like, this guy got to be nuts. So he wants to become established in the area first, and then he'll do that. And Nandaki, he's, of course, you've sent Nandaki some bulls, I believe, from New Varshana. Yes. As his mortgage negotiations, you all know about these.
We just opened up the new the hardware.
Fighting with through his publishing, through his articles and that about it, fighting with Prime Minister Nehru, saying that religious missions are not dungeons of uselessness and misused funds. Prabhupada was very concerned that people would look upon our Krishna conscious movement as escapist with no practical solution. So therefore he wanted, I was discussing this with John Ananda last weekend, he actually wanted, and he said it more than once, that every one of our centers be training places for human beings so they can engage properly in occupational duties. Not only for devotees, but also for non-devotees. Prabhupada's instruction was, when they come to the center for training, how to be an intellectual, a Brahmin, how to be a manager, or a soldier, kshatriya, how to be a farmer, or a merchant of natural products as a vice, or how to be a laborer. When they come for training, they should follow the regular principles at that time while they're here. And he said, in this way, people will look upon the Krishna conscious movement as being able to offer what they perceive as practical solutions to the ills of society. Of course, we're not so stupid. We know that chanting Hare Krishna is not impractical. We know that you're here for a short time and then you die. The real practicality is how not to see another body. But still, Prabhupada explained that Krishna includes everything. Even if you want to live a long life here in this world, Krishna consciousness can teach you how to live the most productive life in even the ordinary sense, whether material or spiritual, because the material energy is also Krishna. So Prabhupada wanted that every one of our centers, he said, not just Jananda was pointing out, not just one place in the world devotees go for training. No, Prabhupada's idea was that every center be a place where devotees and the general population can come for training. Prabhupada said that as long as there's chaos in society, the people won't be peaceful enough to hear transcendental knowledge. And we can see it's a rare soul who will simply come along out of the chaos and say, oh, I want to be Krishna conscious. Most people, their minds are so bizarre and so warped that until they're given some kind of structure and order in their life, they can't think straight. So Prabhupada was concerned about them. Not that he wanted to change anything he'd already done, but he wanted to expand and widen his saving mercy, to widen the net. So he said like that, all our centers should be places where there's training going on for people in the different varnas. Varna means occupational organization as Krishna wants it. So, he was particularly very upset about idleness. And whether you're a devotee or a non-devotee, idleness is very bad. Whether you're a spiritualist or a materialist, you cannot be idle. If you're a spiritualist and you're idle, if you're an idle devotee, your mind will be saturated with material desires. And if you're a materialist and you're idle, you'll simply become a hippie or all these other names you use, Teddy Boy, this whole list of names Prabhupada had written in his response to Nehru. We are against idleness. We want to work hard for Krishna. We want to be productive for Krishna. So Prabhupada's instruction was that even though a Vaishnava is transcendental to various occupational duties, still the Vaishnava, out of mercy, agrees to act in a particular occupation to set the example. So, Prabhupada had this vision that Krishna consciousness can be the basis not only of spiritual liberation, but also the basis of establishing a society in which people can have the preliminaries necessary to make spiritual advancement. Here you are reading about Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. Excuse me. Nanda Maharaj, he's come from Vrindavan, and he's gone to Mathura, and he's meeting Vasudev there. The two were very close, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev. They were like stepbrothers. And Nanda Maharaj was older, as you've heard. Therefore, when they met, Vasudev would offer his namaskar, and Nanda Maharaj would embrace him. And Nanda Maharaj is asking him questions in the proper way. Most people have no idea that there's an art to how to ask questions. You just don't babble anything that comes out of your mouth. Practically speaking, that's one of the first things that devotees should learn after coming to a Krishna conscious center, how to ask proper questions. In the material world, Western civilization, everyone is proud, everyone thinks, I am my own authority, so as soon as there's time to ask a question, they say very challenging. So, what about this, what about that? You said this, and you said that. So on and so forth. They think that anything authoritative is dogma, somebody's opinion, and anything vague, well, that's actually truth. The more vague and nebulous it is, the more we all like it. Just like Ame was telling me yesterday how she went to a New Age bookstore and presented the owner with a Teachings of Lord Kapila Dev. She said, you should buy this, put it in your store, people need to read this. He looked at it, saw the words, His Divine Grace, Prabhupada, realized it was Krishna. This is dogma. Dogma. This is a very famous word throughout New Zealand now. Anytime you try to present them ancient authorized spiritual knowledge, especially Krishna consciousness, they reply, this is dogma. If you look in the dictionary, dogma has a different meaning from the way people use it. They're using it in a negative sense, that this is some artificial truth that's pushed down in your throat in a heavy way. Somebody's own opinion. Basically, they use the word now for whatever they don't want to follow, whatever they don't want to do. You try to tell somebody something, they don't like it, it's dogma. You can just imagine every time the temple president asks you to do something, you just, that's dogma. It's ridiculous. I mean, you might as well just say, I don't want to do it. So similarly, people today, every time you try to explain to them authorized Vedic knowledge, they reply, this is dogma. But if you tell them something like, oh, the truth is whatever you and I think, each one has his own way, oh, you are enlightened. Yes, here, take $100, I will come to your workshop, I will come to your seminar. Especially if there's nice members of the opposite sex here. After every workshop and seminar, it's what's necessary. Anyone here been? You've been to some workshops and seminars? Have you? After, fortunately. After every workshop and seminar, the main thing is that they all embrace, you know, to feel the loving vibration in the atmosphere. And then you start saying things like, oh, in your embrace, I really felt some special love. Could it be that in our past life we had a relationship? And all, you know, one thing leads to another. All this new age stuff is simply an excuse for the good old, you know, eating, sleeping, mating. Yes, I think we must have had a relationship in the past life. Well, maybe we should explore that now. After all, we're all just concerned with love here. We had a wonderful workshop, a wonderful seminar. And, you know, in fact, I've probably got some things you can help me out with, some things I need to overcome. You know, you could probably teach me a lot. And this way, people talk, and ultimately it comes down to their attachment for illicit sex life. So, the fact is, Krishna's teachings are not dogma. They are practical, tried, and true. And in order to understand Krishna, you first have to at least clear yourself up a bit, clean yourself up so you're able to hear properly and ask the proper question. Vasudev, even in his readings of Nanda Maharaj, is showing you how to ask questions properly. He's asking questions according to Nanda Maharaj's occupation. Nanda Maharaj is the king of the cowherd. So Vasudev is asking him, what's going on in your cowherd community? Is there sufficient grass and water for the animals? I hope there's no disease. The vegetation is growing nicely. You see, Father Dave was an administrator, a member of the martial class. It was his job, it's the job of Kshatriyas, warrior administrators, to see that everybody is engaged according to their propensity. The Kshatriya administrator's job is to see that the Brahmins are acting like spiritual intellectuals. They're meant to see that the Vaishyas are growing food and trading natural products. They're meant to see that the Sudras are laboring, being obedient to others. That's the job of the Vedic administrators. So, Vasudeva is acting like that. He knows how to talk to Nanda Maharaj. Similarly, in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni and Angira Rishi came to visit King Shukadeva, they asked him, "How are you doing? Are all the affairs in the kingdom going on nicely? Are the citizens happy? Is everything well regulated?" In other words, because they were talking to a Kshatriya, a ruler, they asked him, "How are you according to his varna?" And then in Ram Lila, you know, that when a Brahmana, Vishvamrita Muni, he was actually a Kshatriya by birth, but by quality he was a Brahmin. So he came to see King Dasarath about getting Ram and Lakshman to rid the Dandakaranya forest of some demons. So Vishvamrita Muni came to see Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Ram, and he wanted to ask, "Please, may your son come and kill some demons." So what was the first thing that Maharaj Dasarath asked him? "How are you doing your efforts to conquer repeated birth and death? You are a Brahmin. You are living in the forest for spiritual cultivation. How are your efforts going on in conquering repeated birth and death?" So this is Vedic civilization. Everything is precise. It's not whimsical, whatever. And anytime there's some kind of authority and standard, that dogma. No. So, Vasudeva is asking this of Nanda Maharaj. And in his question, he's showing you what is the proper basis for organized human society. Land and cows. How to live with nature happily. There's nothing super sensational about ecology for a devotee. Nowadays, everyone's caught up in ecology and the environment. We've got to do something about the hole in the ozone. What are we going to do? Actually, in New Zealand, it's in terms of percentages, it's the world capital for skin cancer, even more than the Gold Coast in Australia. I used to think it was the Gold Coast in Australia, but now I've read that it's actually New Zealand. Of course, I was telling the Aussies when I was there that one prominent professor in Australia, he thinks the problem is so bad. He says, you can't get the Aussies out of the sun. You can try to get them to wear hats, you can try to get them to wear skin lotion, but as long as the standard for beauty is to have a good tan, they won't really take it seriously. So then he began to speak from a natural point of view, and it actually made a lot of sense. He said, how in the world can you take a people who were meant to live in England with 20 minutes of sunshine a day and bring them to Australia where there is, you know, 10 hours of sunshine a day? He said, this is not nature's arrangement. Their bodies are meant for England, where it's always foggy and rainy, and you never see the sun. Then you bring them to Australia, where there's 10 hours of sun. He said, this is not nature's way. Then he said, of course, this didn't make him very popular. He said, the only solution to save the Aussies is they have to intermarry with the Aborigines. Then they'll get melanin, they'll get some brown in their skin, and obviously no one's going to do that, they'd rather die. So, in this way, things are going on. No one has any idea what to do, how to live, and they'd rather die. We'll kill the cows, we'll kill our babies in the womb, we'll get skin cancer, No one wants to control their senses. Therefore, what's the use in talking about ecology or the environment? We're not astonished about the ecology and the environment. We know we have the principles for how to live properly in the environment. It's natural. There's no environmental ecology movements in Vrindavan because they're living according to the instructions of Krishna. Automatically, they're in balance with nature. So, we need to take seriously how we can have the kind of center, this is a Krishna conscious center, how we can have the kind of Krishna conscious center that is a place where people can come and find peace and clarity so they can prosecute the ultimate goal of life. And also a place where people can can come to receive training in how they should structure their lives so that they can make the best use of their short human form of life. That is meant to be our contribution. Our Krishna Conscious Centers, as Prabhupada writes in the fifth canto, are not meant to be places for lazy people, not clubs for lazy people. They're meant to be places, on the contrary, which show the perfection of activity. Everyone's always busy doing something for Krishna. Otherwise, Prabhupada pointed out, as soon as there's idleness, you know what's going to go on. You start thinking of how to make money for yourself and how to have illicit sex. Of course, for vices, there's nothing wrong in thinking how to make money because they have to support their family and also keep Krishna in the center by giving to Krishna. But when one is not engaged in Krishna's service and thinking of Krishna's pleasure, immediately you think, how to get something for me and how to satisfy my senses, and that's where the horrors of Western civilization begin. So Prabhupada's vision was that every one of his centers would be a place where people could find this clarity and peacefulness from hearing about Krishna, from hearing the truth. They're not getting any clarity or peacefulness by hearing all these crazy New Age books that are so popular, especially in New Zealand these days. They're just as confused as ever before. We try to present them Bhagavad Gita and they respond, this Gita is high on the list of dogma books. In other words, now that society has progressed to a stage beyond organized religion. It's funny that back in the 60s and 70s, Krishna consciousness was known as a deviant religion. Now, here in New Zealand, so many people are looking on Krishna consciousness as mainstream religion. It's organized. I don't know. Therefore, it's one of the bogeys now, because it's, you know, it's established. Nowadays, people are thinking that spirituality is your own production, your own creation. You don't need scriptures, you don't need a teacher, it's just you and whatever you feel. That's their standard. And of course, ultimately it simply comes down to how to have sex life. That is the central purpose of material life, the invisible bars on the jail of the material world. So we need places to demonstrate that by hearing from Krishna, clarity comes into your life, purpose comes into your life, happiness comes into your life. People need to come and find a place where this is showing me how I can live. We are not going to be able to accommodate everybody, but at least they should come and see an example. Yes, I should live like that in my own home. Yes, I should, in my own group of friends, try to emulate what they're doing. That's what Prabhupada wanted. So we should think about that, especially in this coming centennial year. How to make an attractive atmosphere here that doesn't discourage people but encourages everyone. Yes, let me simply hear about Krishna and serve Krishna and chant Krishna's name and get some clarity and real vision in my life. When they see devotees, they should get that motivation. Yes, I want to be like that. By the good qualities of the devotees. In this way, we'll do so much to spread Prabhupada's name and fame throughout New Zealand. Because the people here are somehow due to past pious activity, and probably because they didn't have TV until the 60s, they still have some intelligence left, but we have to engage that intelligence, whatever's left there, in Krishna's service, by letting people see how devotees live their lives in such a way that they're showing a solution, the solution to how people should live and base their civilization. So any questions or comments? Jananda? Not Jananda, you are. We must start with the senior. Yes, there is a standard. I don't know all the details, but there definitely is a standard. They do like that because those who are doing it so-called legally, they want to encourage the business. They feel justified to, they feel the urge that we have to justify what we're doing. Therefore, they have to sponsor abortion all across the board, not even so-called within the time limit. But they have to just close their eyes and say, it's not a child, it's not a child, it's just a piece of flesh. Therefore, whether you do it abortion after 3 months or after 8 months, what's the difference? Until it's born, it's not a person. They have to just shut their eyes like that. And of course, the material nature is very powerful. Once you start acting according to the mode of ignorance, you get further entangled. You just become more and more sinful. Krishna says this himself in the Gita. Tanaham Vrittata Puran Samsareshu Naradama. Those who are envious and mischievous, he throws into more and more demoniac situations and species. So this is the kind of society that people think is very peaceful and okay. As long as they're getting their salary, as long as they're getting their social money, they think things are all right. As Jananda was pointing out, and in fact, they don't even stick to their degraded standards. They go lower than their degraded standards.